Hello and welcome to the In Money Players Podcast, very special edition of the show. It is our Thirsty Thursday virtual happy hour slash handicapping contest, and you have a few minutes left. If you're not already involved, get involved, and you can't just fake your way through live like I was hoping to do. It's a pick and pray. You've got to have all your picks in straight away. So if you want to play, I don't know, DJ Unstable, if there's a way we can flash the URL up on the screen. Basically, if you go to horseplayers.com, there's still time to sign up. But, you know, it's a work in progress. We're having fun. We're doing something different. If racing happens to continue, not too sure if that is going to be something that will be the case. But if it does, maybe we'll do something like this again. Maybe it'll be the first of something that's going to have a little bit of a break before it comes back. We're very happy you joined us. We are doing this for the benefit of our partners at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We're also hoping people will give along the way. TRFinc.org/players. Our other charity beneficiary chosen by our friends at the Breeders' Cup is the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. We've got 6 races on tap. It's a feeder for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. And through it all, my usual co-host in these type of shenanigans will be joining from the planet Texas. If you didn't know why his Twitter handle was at UT Big Hair, folks, you are about to find out. He is the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, my man?
Yeah, what's going on? I don't know what's happening. I'm confused. I have an afro. I hear Matt talking on one thing. I hear you talking on the other. Technology at its finest. I'm sure people will figure it out. But in the meantime, I'll just keep picking out my hair and saying hello to everyone.
I like it. I like it. We'll see if we can get some intel as to what happened to Matt, just to give you an idea. To get, we're going to bring him out from behind the curtain, not necessarily to see him or to talk on the show unless he wants to. But a lot of people asked, you know, this DJ Unstable who helped get the podcast going when we went independent a year and a few months ago. DJ Unstable, who is he? None other than ex-DRF producer Craig. Craig Gorbunov. Craig, just so you know, what I'm seeing on the bottom of my screen is a nice little postage stamp picture of JK, but then where Matt Bernier was when we were testing before the show began, it just says connection problems and is giving me a spinning wheel of death. So I don't know if that helps you to troubleshoot where he is. Hopefully we can get that sorted out and bring him in a minute, but JK, let me start off with a question for you. Are you actually playing in this thing?
Absolutely. Horses running in a circle, I'll be doing my best to participate. So I have a beer. I have my pick and pray picks in already. And I felt like I better just grab one.
Now, from the color of that beer, it sure looks like a New England style IPA. And knowing you, I think that means one thing and one thing only. Is that lovely electric jellyfish that you brought up to Saratoga? There it is. There's the can. That is extremely good stuff. 6.5%, not too heavy. I am doing a full-on support of all of the local Brooklyn breweries here. So I'm starting out with a crowler of farmhouse ale from my friend Brett over at Wild East Brewing Company. We've also got some stuff from Strong Rope, some stuff from Threes, and some stuff from Folks Beer. We'll see how many beers we have to have during the course of the show. The tech problems we're starting off with, I may get to all 4. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, I don't want to fall asleep here. It is Gulfstream. I don't know how much Gulfstream is post-drafting these days. I do see our next guest, Craig, in my screen now. He was not there before. I'm thinking this means maybe we can bring him in. And I believe we have a musical cue to help us do that. TV's Matt Bernier. Matt, how are you today?
Good. Sorry about the little hiccup there. I had JK. I had producer Craig. I didn't have you. So that's why I started just riffing. But now I think we're all good to go. Yeah?
I think so. I'm not sure what went out on the broadcast. We'll figure it all out and get it edited for podcast. Now I have a screen that has all three of us. But really, to be honest, Matt, no offense to you, all I can look at is JK's hair.
Well, I mean, how could you get around that? That is the focal point. No, he's front and center, directly in the center of the screen. I mean, it's a thing of beauty.
Matt, you go ahead, JK.
I got to tell you, the most impressive part is that Matt panicked in that moment when he didn't see you, and he just put on his TV hat and he started hosting the thing. Last Saturday on the podcast on Fox Sports, we were switching talent from at the studio where the hosts were Lafitte and Greg were, and the producer came in my ear and said, "JK, take us to break." Whoa! That is JK take us to break. I was stumbling all over myself trying to read prices. That's not what I'm there for. I'm going to talk about horses, not taking anything to break.
I think you'd be a good your broadcasting skills. I think you've got a club in your bag. Well, we're going to get you going here, doing some of your own podcast too. This potential hiatus coming up with horse racing, maybe a good time to get done with that. But Matt, let's bring it back to you for a minute. How are you enjoying your time in semi-isolation? And are you playing in this contest today?
Yeah, I'm in the contest. I tell you what, if you like any of the horses I do, you're probably in trouble. I think I could get Secretariat beat right now. But yeah, I mean, look, isolation, it's rough, like I'm sure it is for everyone. We're kind of biding our time and trying not to lose your mind. I finished up Tiger King last night. You want to talk about a slice of life? That is, if you haven't seen it, you got to get down on that on Netflix, because that, I mean, of all the different documentaries I've seen on that on Netflix or Amazon or wherever else, I mean, that thing is, it's got to be a top three at least, if not right outright number one.
Which one? Slice of Life or Tiger King?
Oh, is Slice of Life actually one of them?
Oh, have you seen Tiger King?
No, that's what I was saying. I was calling that whole thing a slice of life.
Okay, yeah. Dude, it's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life.
If you haven't seen it, it's when you think it's bizarre enough, it takes like four more hand turns, and it just, the whole thing is all out of whack. It's unbelievable.
I actually don't know anything about it, and sometimes that is the absolute best way to go into this. So I'm just going to, sight unseen, add it to my queue, and perhaps later tonight after Susan and the Pear Bear are in bed and I'm looking to entertain myself for a bit more, I'll check it out. Hey, give me an update, guys. I don't have the video in front of me. How many minutes do you think it's going to be until the gates pop for this first race at Gulfstream?
It's 0 minutes, and I often do this when I'm talking to friends. Like, hey, are you going to pick me up? What time are we going to meet? A lot of times I'll say, you know, they'll say, oh, I'll be there in 15 minutes. And I say, 15 regular or 15 Gulfstream? Yeah. And if they say 15 Gulfstream, I know I got an extra.
So you, do you have the video up? Are they going to the gate yet? Or can we?
No. They are gallivanting right now. Okay. They're not close to the gate. I will, I'll let you know.
Help me out. Oh, there we go.
There's a feet.
That's cool. Looks to me like that's, it's hard to see exactly, but it looks like we're probably still 2-3 minutes from the off here. I don't know how much we want to spend talking about these races. I think instead, for this first one, when people can still change their picks, let's talk generally about tomorrow. JK, prediction from you with the news today that Javier Castellano has tested positive for the virus. Are you confident we're going to see racing at Gulfstream tomorrow?
I think so. I mean, from what I understand, he hasn't been to the facility since the 15th, and that's not quite the 14-day situation, but it sounds like they found a way to kind of work around the fact that he hadn't been, wasn't showing symptoms at the time, and apparently isn't still showing symptoms. So a release on Twitter that sounds like everything's going to go ahead as scheduled. So I don't think they've announced officially that the end of the meet will be Saturday. I think that the writing's on the wall. With the mandatory being moved and so on and so forth. And Saturday might be the last day at Gulfstream time being.
Hopefully things will be able to continue in California for a little while. It sounds like they're taking these protocols very seriously. I know for me, Matt, it's been a wonderful to be able to have racing going on during this. And I have said in many different places, I believe the unique nature of racing with 90% of the people needed to put on the show already in place that I don't believe it significantly increases the danger. I've been okay with racing continuing to this point, especially in places like California, where they're clearly taking the safety protocols seriously. How much racing have you been watching of late, and how much more do you think we're going to get to see before too long?
I mean, I don't know how much longer, honestly, it can go on, but I understand and I agree with your sort of point of view, as they're, in case you're still playing along, they're loading into the gate. You probably have two or three left to go, mainly because of what you said. I mean, the horses need to be taken care of. There are people there in the mornings. You can't just leave the horses in the barn. They need to get some exercise, whether it's just walking the shed row or actually out on the track. You might as well run in the afternoon bulletin crew at that point. So I understand the folks that say you need to shut it down and abide by everyone else's rules. But at the same time, kind of to your point, you know, it's already as few far between as possible as it. So I don't know how it's gone on. It's been a nice interaction.
Gulfstream Park, gentlemen, who did you play in this race, J.K.? Start
Matt,
what did you do?
So, Dan, but I'll tell you what, and go back to being able to beat the two horses in a row that I wanted to just put up front, and neither broke. So, I mean, this is just off of the course at this point. Sitting just to break them from the length of it. So, you know, take your chances.
All right, we are heading in the turn, it looks like, and it's 8-10 up to JK Matt, both in with shots here. This is a time, so it's a little different kind of super fun to talk strategy and contents that you're following. Fun too, because on the horse.com site, we'll be able to see the various picks and who's drawn live to what. What do you think here, Ken? They're turning for God. Look, but here, I'm going to die here.
It won't switch lanes if he's too much war. He's still pitching. He just wants the gates not stopping.
He never stopped. The one flying on that's going to make this much eight. And it looked like the eight held, I think, there. Matt, are you good? Just call it. Think happened.
I think the eight prevailed there. I call it 8-1-9-10, but I guess the idea, right? You know, and the turf, it seems like it's a little bit kind of speed. I don't know that you want to be coming from 100 out of it. And I mean, look, Louis Saez is a good gate rider. Gargan's Barn continues to roll along, and it's kind of the position I would have liked to have been in had Rose's Star actually broke. But just lick your wounds and move on to the next race.
Have you, Matt, gotten as many people coming out of the woodwork as JK and I have, looking to get new information about horse racing and trying to figure out how they can ramp up? According to all the ADWs, signups were huge last weekend, and it feels like there's plenty of interest in racing. That I'm just curious to know if you've had a lot of people ask you for how they can learn more and keep things moving and grooving.
Yeah, I mean, just to put it in perspective, I did my buddy up here, Mike Mutnansky, I did his radio show on WEEI on last Friday night. And I get it, Friday night, you know, it's not prime time. But at the same time, he goes, we're doing this because people are asking him. He's a big racing guy. They want to know who he likes for the weekend, things of that nature. And he goes, we wouldn't really have this time to be able to do this in any other circumstance. And I kind of echo that, where I have people asking me about, you know, who's doing what, who's watching what should I be paying attention to? So, I mean, it's definitely been, for as bad as the situation is, I'm happy that racing is trying to take advantage of it while they have the chance, while also recognizing that I think everybody involved needs to be smart about things. And look, if things continue to kind of be as tough as they are in certain places, then eventually you're going to have to move on. But for now, yeah, take advantage of it while you can.
All right, we're going to get the leaderboard, our first leaderboard here in a couple of minutes. JK, I might let you talk through what those names are. If we're still waiting for it to be official, though, my next question for you is, what advice are you giving people on resources to help get them started? Because I know, you know, people watching this broadcast right now, or listening to our podcast, they're already on their path to being proper horse players if they're not there already. But I bet they are hearing from people too. What advice are you giving to people for how they can ramp up their knowledge of horse racing and hopefully make it part of their betting arsenal?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's hard is, like, us as horse players, I can go to the racetrack and make one wager that day, right? Because I've learned that making a wager on every race is probably not ideal. The other thing is there's, like, a lot more complex things that we all do, multi-race bets, wheeling, you know, backup tickets, all these things. Like, you can't really tell someone new to the game how to do all of that stuff. It's a little overwhelming, I think, at this initial stage. You want to show them it's a fun game to watch. You want to give them that piece, that taste of that thrill when a horse that you wagered on turns for home on top, or makes a lead and, you know, jumps up in the last couple of jumps to win. So one of the things I did was I kind of reverted back to when I started, and I was giving people win place horses, whether they were short price horses or not. I was giving people show horses for races that I probably would want to pass normally, but I know that they don't understand that. They're watching and they want action, so I'll give them a show horse. I mean, I think I even gave a couple of friends some exacta boxes, which is something I haven't done in a very, very long time. But, you know, there's a lot of different options of that you can do, I think, to kind of guide people along and introduce them to our game. It's, man, the barrier to entry in horse racing is very tough. It's a complicated game. There's a lot of different pieces and aspects of things that we just forget that are in our head. So I was just trying to give them action, let them see the ball go through the hoop, because I felt like that would get them to come back.
Another thing I think would be a great way to introduce new players, something was teaching Perrin about the other day, if we could get head-to-head wagers in with the correct pricing and fixed odds. Perrin was a big fan. She was helping me be on the right side of a few of them the other day. This is our secondary producer. Perrin, say hi to everybody.
Hi.
How good is Daddy as – Daddy's your teacher, basically. How good is Daddy at teaching you various things? I think the hesitation says it all. So you clearly came into the office here because you had something to tell me. What was it? Mommy stole my hat, apparently. Well, tell her she's absolutely welcome to it. You guys have fun. We're going to rendezvous for pizza later. Thank you, Perrin, for coming on in. Hey, Ken, we have that leaderboard now.
Let's hit refresh. I'm sure we do. We do. The people got 17-6. I'm going to roll through some names if we recognize Hunter Archibald. Actually, funny story. This is a guy that I went to UT with. We used to play in video game contests together. He reaches out every year for the Derby, but this year he's shown like renewed interest. And yesterday he had his best day ever in racing. He was hitting tries, exactas, pick threes, pick fours, and he's playing in the contest here. So congratulations to Hunter. We got Billy Koch of Little Red Feather fame who hit the horse. Matt Scarletta from the Ring. We got Scott Coles, former NHC champion, Tyler Wissman, Peter Dressens, the best dressed man in racing, Tony Joe. He hit it on all three entries because he's the smartest man in the room.
There you go.
So, Michael Baychok picked up a measly 30 cents. Pete Rotundo, Basil DeVito, Eric Bylick, Dan Torgerman, all with hitting some place money there too. So a lot of fun.
That's a hoot. That's a great, great leaderboard. This is a really fun aspect of horseplayers.com you're seeing right now on these pick and praise, that ability to see who played what and who's playing what going forward. You know, if you, for example, I think you probably couldn't help but learn something looking at how a guy like Tony Joe, I just use him as an example, but you could use really any of the people you just name check, JK, get a window into what kind of strategy somebody like that's using, because you can see how they decided to approach this. And, you know, I don't really know what the optimal 3-6 race pick and pray strategy is, but I'm going to take a wild guess that whatever Tony did is pretty smart. Looks like
I love what Tony did. Let me tell you Tony real fast. He has three entries. He has they're all the same except for one race. He has three different horses in that leg. So, and it's I believe it's Golden Gate 4. He's used the 3, the 5, and the 9, but on every other entry, he played the exact same way.
Reminds me of a young Jonathan Kinchin.
So one of us is smarter than the other one.
What are we looking like at Gulfstream? How many? All right, Golden Gate. How many minutes do we have till the next race?
They're about to go. They are all loaded in. This four horse is being bet like the horse can't lose. I don't know if that's the case or not, obviously, but 6-5. I mean, people are going buck wild for this thing. So,
buck wild. That's a good one.
It's a wild move too. Claimed out of a win most recently, dropping back from a mile to 5.5 here this afternoon.
So this may be disappointing to some people watching the stream live, but we had some connectivity issues while trying to stream the last race live. So we are not going to do that this time. Instead, we're going to let JK and Matt talk you through it while I go to get another beer.
I was going to say, I'll be honest with you. I burned through two in the first. How long have we been doing this? 19 minutes? I burned through two. I'm going to be a six-pack deep by the time this is.
This is a real happy hour. When I'm standing at happy hour with people and I'm talking, like when I'm not talking, I'm drinking. I don't know what else to do.
Have they popped yet?
They just broke from the gate. Yes.
Be right back. You guys hold down the fort.
JK, you want to take the play-by-play?
I don't know. Travis Stone does not have nearly as much hair as I do. the four is on the lead.
I was going to say, the chalk on the turn back is cleared off to the front, is opened up, about two lengths, I'd say, on the seven horse? Or you got two horses, the seven and the six.
I used the six horse who just steadied and checked a little bit, ran up into a little bit of a spot there. Golden Gate's tricky. Every time I think I know who's going to win in a Golden Gate race, something completely different happens. Like right now, I like my position with the six, but I have a feeling that's going to change.
Like when I was looking at the PPs, I was like, probably not great that I haven't watched the Golden Gate race in I don't know how long. So I couldn't tell you the first thing about this track. The four is in deep water, it looks like. Six is trying to go on by.
There we go.
Finish. Who do you guys have?
I have the six. The six.
Yeah, six by about a neck. I ran third, I think, with the three.
How about the who are high on the leaderboard? That's sort of a fun thing. You can get a little bit of a preview of what's going to happen by because all those picks are posted for the whole time on these pick and prays.
I do want to talk about this one idea too. But let's look real quick. Let's see leaderboard of the people that were up there. Joe Aguilar, Sam Stinson, Barry Camarda had the six. Chris Inman had the six. Scott Coles, like he needs the money, had the six. I will say this, an interesting thought that I kind of had, you know, doing the shows last week and thinking about it, and even talking to a lot of our horse owner friends, I'm keeping my eyes peeled for horses dropping right now. And I think aggressive drops in this time with so much uncertainty, I think other times where these aggressive drops can be looked at as a negative, I think these aggressive drops can be looked at as businessmen and horse owners trying to lessen the amount of their burn, right? Not what their monthly burn is. We have a friend, Pete, who if racing stopped, his monthly burn's like $175,000. And he's not like he's not, and this is no offense to Saul, he's not our Saul Kuhn friend with lots of money and lots of partners to help kind of fight through that. I mean, he's he's a guy that's involved. And so I've been looking for aggressive drops, and that's one of the reasons I kind of leaned on Emma's Beast was dropping from 12.5 to 62.5. But
interesting. Did you notice that last weekend, JK, as an angle that was paying dividends?
I mean, not a whole. I mean, a couple times Brad Cox dropped one at Oaklawn that ran off the screen and won by like 12. That in a normal situation you'd be like, ooh, that's a nasty drop. But
And to turn it back to part of the reason why we're here, I think this is another window into why this is an important time. You know, obviously there's so much financial uncertainty and you know, you got to be in a position to not going to ask anybody to be donating to charity right now who's not in a pretty solid position themselves. But organizations like the TAA and like the TRF that dedicate themselves to these horses' homes after their days are done, I have a feeling they're going to be as busy as ever, busier than ever in these uncertain times. So it's a reason why, you know, I thank everybody out there who decided to play in this contest. Also for those who, the folks who want to donate, we encourage that. I don't know the best way to direct donate to Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, but you can certainly go to their website. But for TRF, of course, we have our little page, trfinc.org/players. That's drfinc.org/players. We got some questions about my beer. This is my man, Jason Soller. He's been in the New York beer community for almost as long as I have. Home brewer, beer aficionado, started his own brewery 5 years ago. Strong Road Brewery. I'm a huge supporter of them from day one. And this is his Trophy Cat Blonde, which is just this wonderful, like, light-bodied. It tastes like it's like fresh bread. It's just like this really, really clean, nice, very sessionable beer. Great with food. And that was my next call. So for the folks out there on Facebook asking about it, Trophy Cat from Strong Rope. Strong Rope, very much worth a visit, especially for their chili contest, which I love to participate in. JK, what are you doing there? You're just holding up your
I'm doing electric. Yeah, electric jellyfish. Electric jellyfish from Pint House Pizza, Hazy IPA. And before I went to Saratoga last summer, that was the last stop I made on my way up, and I bought like 120 beers. They didn't make it past like the third week. I was giving them away. And whatever.
You did give me a 4-pack, and I appreciate it. Matt, what about you? What
do
you?
I think I drank two of them. I think I gave you a 4-pack and drank.
Yeah, that's
you. This right here, this is a brewery up here. I live on the North Shore of Massachusetts. This is Notch. This is a little brewery in Salem, Mass. This is just kind of their drinking beer, their Session Pilsner. I don't do anything crazy. I'm not an IPA guy. I just want to be able to have 4, 5, 6 and just drink them and not feel like I'm going to die. So I stick with what's basically pretty straightforward. I'd call this their drinking beer. So I'm going to go refill.
Matt, and I will say, Matt, this is the first time I've seen you with a drink in your hand that wasn't a Jack and Diet Coke. So I'm very
that
happy
is 100% true.
supporting the movement. All right, JK, any surprises on this new leaderboard there we go. We got it. We got it right up there on the screen. Good old R. Scott Coles. Funny. I think Scott said he couldn't even watch. He just put in picks and is running around. Otherwise, we'd make him pay for his sins by coming on here and talking to us. Talk us through some of the other names up there.
I wonder if R. Scott Coles was bred and owned by none other than Rich Averill, right? Double R. He got the R in the front. R. Scott Coles. Wow, that's got to be a mistake.
So no, I'm going to interrupt. JK, just because I heard a rumor, you mentioned Rich Averill. He puts the R in horses' names. And somebody told me that he named a horse R Ninja JK, known as you are as a huge fan of the American Ninja Warrior program. Are we to surmise that Double R, Rich Averill, named this horse after you?
He did. He told me that... He told me, where were we hanging out? Maybe we were in New Orleans. And he told me that I could pick which one I wanted. So I went with R Ninja JK. There were some other ones on the table. I almost went with RUT Big Hair, but I told him when this one breaks the maybe we'll do RUT Big Hair.
All right, now you can get back to the leaderboard.
Okay, who else do we got here? We got Rich Nielsen, Brandon Stubble, I'm not mistaken, of Clocker fame. Ron Tackett, I've seen the number, but I'm blanking. We got Billy Koch still in the mix, Tyler Wissman, I can't ever say his last name. It seems Italian, Pete. I'll let you type Frosto. Is that how you say it?
Frosto. I don't think he's Italian, though.
What is that? It's Frosto.
I don't know. We got to get him, Tyler. If you're watching, tell us your background, as it were.
Tell us your ethnicity. What is your ethnicity? I'm just kidding.
Got another name on there. I don't know if you guys are familiar. I assume it's actually Pete Macheska from Fox Sports.
Yes, big contest player. And yeah. Definitely had the pleasure of meeting him at the NHC and definitely connected with some of the other degenerates we've seen participating in this contest. So I'm sure that's it's very cool.
I met Pete this summer. He was involved in our Travers show.
Oh, right.
And he was also responsible for helping sort out tickets to the – ooh, you guys are going to get mad at me when I mess this up. NLCS? No, ALCS.
It could be ALCS? Either.
Yeah. The game that I go to, Pete.
This is This is a great, this is just great proof why you shouldn't be getting these good tickets if you don't even know. The man who doesn't know that the Yankees and the American League, I mean, this is just, like, Aaron knows that. I mean,
yeah, that's tough.
Horrendous. Just stop, JK. Just stop. Matt, how are we looking for this next race at Gulfstream? What do we got? What do we got cooking?
So we got 5 minutes to post, allegedly. It's probably not going to be five. It'll probably be closer to 10. So there's a 3-5 shot down on the inside for Pletcher and Saez. And, you know, I guess on any other day, if you're looking at it, you're playing the pick sequence, whatever it is. I guess the horse makes sense. You know, broke through the N1X most recently. We jump up to N2X here this afternoon, going three quarters. Set a pretty slow pace in that most recent run on February 6th, out gate-to-wire fashion. I think there's some other speed in this race, so I'd be surprised not only if the horse got the lead, but got it comfortably. You know, this to me is one of those races, and again, far be it me to comment on the contest recently. I haven't played in a big one in a long time, and I haven't done well in any of them in a long time, but the idea for me is I look at this horse and say, sure, it can win, but from a contest standpoint, you're looking at big numbers anywhere else for the most part. I mean, your second and third, your second choice co-second choices, I should say, the 5 and the 8, Mios and Frosted Grace. You look at the doubles, the 8's going to take a little bit more. No, the 5, excuse me. 5 is looking at 31.40, the 8's looking at 38.60. So maybe Mios stays around the 9-2 range. Frosted Grace comes down a little bit from there. But Soldado is going to be probably, 7-5 when it's all said and done. And I think some other horses in here are interesting. I ended up going with the 10, which I kind of have to bet if we're anything close to the 22-1.
JK, how about you? Where did you land? Did you see it?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I thought Soldado was interesting just because he's undefeated off the layoff. If you want to consider the debut winning first out as being a layoff, he lost two times stretching out the one turn mile and then also mile on the 16th at Oakland. Then comes back sprinting off a 300-day break and wins. Now he's coming off a 49-day break. Now, I don't love the rail draw and I don't love the price. So can he win? Sure. I gave you a million reasons why he can win, but I thought that Ballandine, like Matt said, was live. And then let's not forget, once upon a time, Mijos was like a horse we were kind of excited about on the Derby trail last year. Obviously, his form off after that race, I believe, was the Mucho Macho Man. Mm-hmm. Got a break after the Holy Bull. I just thought maybe it made sense for him coming back, coming in, going a little bit shorter. But I kind of expected him to be shorter on the board. And the fact that he's 4-1 is actually making me a little bit more concerned. I thought he would be bet a little bit harder. He's been working at Palm Meadows, so obviously there's some workout info there. He's one that I went with ultimately, but Matt's right. If Ballandine goes off at 21-1, I'll be trying my hardest to switch my picks or at least try to make up for it paramutually.
All right. Extremely random question we were talking about Tyler Frausto's name. Apparently his heritage, that's a much better word than ethnicity, okay? His heritage is Mexican and Armenian, which to me says there's only one state, there's not only one state in America where he could be from, but only one city, clearly an Angelino, clearly got to be from Los Angeles with that mix, and that's Tyler. So we got that.
Hey, without a doubt, as the person on this broadcast who's been asked the most about your ethnicity, I'm definitely allowed to say it.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, if I said that, it would have been way worse. There's no doubt about it.
Hey, Jonathan, real quick, with Mijos, what do you do? I mean, does the equipment change mean anything to you? Blinkers go on for the first time here. 8 start off of a lengthy layoff. Does that mean anything?
I mean, I think maybe just a sharper run, right? They're going shorter than they've. They probably trained him to relax right after he broke his maiden thinking Derby. Hey, we got to get this guy to relax, relax, relax. And now they're coming back at 6. Maybe they found out they're going to try to turn him into a sprinter. Mm-hmm. And that the two-turn mile races were more of a three-year-old dream. And here we go. Let's just make him a sprinter. Let's put him in the race. He'll have some stamina to hang on for a second. I don't know if that's true, but if I was trying to convince myself that it was, that's how I would do it.
No, but I mean, I'm look, the two turn thing didn't work. They tried it a couple times, fine. I'm not going to hold that against the horse. The Belmont race in September, I know he ran into a performer who looks like he could be, you know, arguably one of the big boys as far as the older horses are concerned this year, but he just didn't, he didn't do much in there. And I wonder if it's almost, are we just, we got to try to shake something up, because clearly he, based on that form that we're looking at from last year, whether it was late as a 2 year old, early as a 3 year old, there wasn't really any progression. And again, granted, two of the races, I don't think he was doing anything that he wanted to do. I was just curious, you know, do you look at this? I don't want to say it's a sign of desperation. He's only run seven times, but is it a concern for you with a horse like this who was as hyped and was as talked about as he was, that all of a sudden we're coming back? We're not going to try to just run him back and get a race into him. We're going to change up the equipment and try to see what happens.
I mean, I think maybe it's last year was square peg round hole. Mm-hmm. And now they're just accepting that this is what he is. They got him away from the pony right now, warming up. My time hanging out with Gary Stevens, that's one thing he always looks at. Are they still with the pony? Did they get away from the pony? From a
warming up well. So
they're going to ask him to go on with it from there. So let's see what happens. But I agree with what you're saying. I have questions about it. But I think if this horse was like four or five, or I'm sorry, if this horse was five, I would be concerned.
Sure.
But I think that, like we said, I think they were trying to do something last year that I would do if I had a good three-year-old too. Mm-hmm. And now it's regroup time. Let's turn him into a one-run sprinter.
Which is one of the things, honestly, for me, that's going to be the most interesting with the sort of altered schedule this year. You know, with the Derby being in September, for the longest time, it's felt like you have a lot of the horses that are square peg, round hole, just trying to get to the first Saturday in May. Now, there's a ton of races in theory. Again, hopefully everything continues on. There are a ton of opportunities to go short or let horses run on grass. It's probably what they're trying to do. Do you just keep trying to sort of stay the course to get to a race like the Derby, or do you actually run them where, I hate to say, they belong, but do you cave and say there's still a ton of money for us to be run? Why wouldn't we run in the Belmont Derby or run in one of those other races if we think we have a grass horse where years prior you would have already tried the Kentucky Derby? It wouldn't have worked. You go to the grass, nobody's anything. Now, do you hold out hope and you try to push the sort of square peg round hole idea?
No, you're 100% right. And I think you bring up a great point. I mean, I would think that Churchill and Naira should consider making the Belmont Derby a points race. What the heck? I mean,
why not?
Interesting. Yeah, why not? It's a $1 million race, mile and a quarter. You know, I mean, I guess if I had a good three-year-old right now, in my brain, I'm thinking Arkansas Derby first Saturday in May. I'm thinking Haskell or Travers, and then I'm thinking Derby. Like, I wouldn't – I mean, to me, we talked about it on the show, the Derby's lost its luster this year, and that's fine. I'm not – it's still the greatest race in American racing, but this year it's the way that it falls and the way that – it's not early in the three-year-old year anymore, so you kind of you lose that special notion of precocity there. So, I mean, I would want – if my Derby this year, if I was a three-year-old owner, would be the Travers. That's what I would want to win.
Interesting. That's very interesting, JK, especially I guess there is a possibility that's going to be moved earlier in the Saratoga meet. There's a lot of dominoes to fall here, and very much like hitting a winning target. I have a contest question. We will talk more three-year-olds, and we're going to talk obviously about this Florida Derby when we get a nice little break. But with the little break we have here before they get into the gate and pop at Gulfstream for their ninth race, I it looked to me like, especially looking at the first page on the leaderboard, that this 4-5 shot, the one, seems pretty underrepresented among the folks currently at the in, you know, the top 20 or so on the leaderboard. I was just curious to get to hear a theory from you, Jonathan, about why that might be.
I mean, I think it's the saying, the protection of the chalk, right? Is like, I think a lot of horse players that play a lot of pick and praise and play a lot of these online $2 win plays contests, like if that horse wins, he's probably not going to hurt you. He's not going to necessarily be the reason that you lost. Now, if you like the horse, those $4 mean a lot. We've talked about the power of $4 a ton of times. I can't tell you how many contests I wish I had $4 at the end and I didn't. But I think that the consensus amongst contest players is you let that horse protect you because he's such a small price and will give such small mutuals to the people that do them, and then you allow yourself to take a chance on a horse that actually means more to you in the grand scheme of things.
I think if I like the horse, I would love in an only six race contest where you've got a pick and pray format where folks can't, you know, move the target as the scores go up. If it was a shorty that I liked a lot, I would have zero problem playing it. And I feel a little bit like it's underrepresented, suggesting that maybe it really just is an underlay. Is that, I mean, it sounds based on what you guys were saying about the race before that you don't necessarily disagree with that, Matt, but I'm just curious to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I still look at the horse and say, again, like Jonathan echoed, I mean, obviously win. It, you know, that's not breaking any news here. I just don't know that the horse deserves to be even money in a relatively full field. You've still got nine going, even with the defection of the six horse. So, and given the circumstances that the horse prevailed in with that most recent run, I just, look, anything can happen. I can't imagine you're going to be able to waltz on the front end by yourself the way that this horse did. If you look at some of the sort of pace ratings for that most recent run, they weren't going fast. So if the horse wins, that's fine. And it won't be a surprise. I just think the horse is going to need to do it in a different fashion. And again, knowing that the horse has shown it in the past, can sit off and be effective. I don't need to find out at even money. I don't need the $4 that bad, but I agree with you, Pete, that like, look, in a short contest with only six races, you need some winners. I mean, you can sit here and take bombs. At the end of the day, if you don't have any winners, you're SOL.
It's interesting just looking at the top of the leaderboard now and fairly spread out. The eight we were discussing before, very well represented with three of the folks in the five-way tie for the lead currently. Now, Scott Coles has the two, and then Barry Camarda having the seven. They're getting ready to go into the gate here for Gulfstream's ninth, and we'll move things along as we approach the halfway point in this contest. Remind us again who you guys ended up on for the contest.
I have the 10. I like Ballandine. I bet him as well just to win. I'm stunned at his price. I mean, maybe that's not a good sign.
The eight,
Jonathan among the crew with the eight, but I don't know. I mean, to me, Matt, when you're looking at a horse like with those kind of credentials, there are times where I feel like a little bit of you know, being friendless in the betting makes me worried. With a horse like this, I almost feel like it's the longer the price, the better. So they are off at Gulfstream Park. You happy with where you are, Jonathan?
No, not really.
Last? You don't want to?
Yeah, I think if you have the five Frosted Grace, you're feeling pretty good.
I will say this. When you're dead last, I usually get annoyed. It's like I never want to be last, but if you are going to be dead last, let it be when it's a 40-1 and a 60-1 in front.
No, you're right.
The eight's running. Yeah, I was going to say you might still be able to get. You might still win this thing.
Ten being assed hard, eight swinging up on the outside.
Oh, look at the one battle on the inside. I think the one might have got it.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you guys are way. I'm way behind you.
Sorry, but
so I started actually. That reminded me of the NHC for a second, where every time there's a favorite running, if I didn't even wasn't paying attention, I'll ask people who's the favorite. They'll say the one, and then I just start cheering for the one. That's kind of what happened there. He went off at 4-5, came up the rail. Am I shocked that he won? Absolutely not. But man, he needed every inch of that racetrack to win at 4-5. He's the horse you're supposed to play against.
Tony, in his three entries, did use that one. So that's going to put him in a very interesting position heading into this next race, where I think that's the one, JK, you said, where he's going to have three different runners. But we'll see. We'll get a new leaderboard up here in just a couple of minutes as we wait for this. We wait for the next race at Golden Gate. I'm thinking this might be a good time to start looking ahead to some of tomorrow's action. Matt, have you had a chance to fully handicap the Florida Derby yet, or what are your thoughts about it at this point?
Yeah, I did. I took a look at the floor. Say again?
Like everybody else in the world, you've lost track of days. We have 2 days until the
Florida. 2 days.
Oh, there you go.
Tomorrow's Friday. yeah, look, the Florida Derby, I went into it with an open mind, saying, you know, let me see what some of these horses look like. I've been a big fan of Governor Morris since day one. The more and more I looked at the race, the more and more I just think Tis Law is the way the horse to beat in here. And I don't I don't know that I'll be betting him because he's going to be the favorite, and depending on what the price ultimately ends up being. But his Holy Bull, given the form of the race, the way that it has continued to hold up, the way that he won impressively as he did, I don't think a mile and an eighth is going to be a problem for him. Clearly, the track's not an issue. People have brought up, you know, the shoe issue where we missed a little bit of time. He's come back with four solid works. In my opinion, and I graded stakes type of horse. I thought he humbled him. I just think there's a real scenario where, as much as I would like Governor Morris to run well, because I've got future bets on him, I kind of think Tis the Law might just be too much horse for these.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of him. I'm really curious to see how he does. When we did our Tampa Bay Derby show and we had the aforementioned Rich Averill, sharp handicapper and owner, we were talking about him before, and the way he put it, I thought was brilliant in its simplicity. That the horse had won the previous day with a ride that seemed like it was designed to get him beat. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if he's moved forward and looking at the workouts. I agree, he probably has. JK, how do you see this year's Florida Derby?
I mean, from all the races I've seen, you know, east of Texas, the Tis the Law is the only horse that can compete with those monsters that Baffert has. And, you know, look, I thought that at the Indians last race was great, but I thought he beat a poor field and took advantage of it and did what you're supposed to do when you have some speed. He broke, he went to the front, he advanced his position. So Governor Morris, yeah, sure, he can absolutely get the job done. But if Tis the Law gets a clean trip, he's going to win. If he gets a clean trip, and I'm rooting for him to get a clean trip for obvious reasons, with all the hubbub with the connections with him and Johnny and Manny and Angel. And I want Manny to get the win. It's an important mount in his career, and it's an important race in his life, because if he gets beat, I'd imagine he'll get taken off.
For those that don't know the story, we won't get into the whole Days of Our Lives soap opera involving Tis the Law and the jockey potential musical chairs. But it does seem like, I mean, just reading between lines, it seems like there's some within the camp not been happy with the way that the horse has been ridden and looking to knock him off. However, it seems like these rides, criticized as they were, my read is he was riding instructions to some degree or another, and Barkley Tag, its potential pressure from outside forces, has elected to keep him in position. And I agree, he's somebody we've seen rides so well over the last few years, and I'd love to see him have this be his true proper breakout mount. And I suspect you're right, JK. Should something go wrong, this would probably be the end of that partnership. As much as Tag has had his back to this point, that would probably be a bridge too far. JK, if you were to suggest a horse to use as a B horse, as it were, something at a little bit more of a price in the Florida Derby, what direction would you go in?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd call him a B horse, but he's a win alternative for me, is Independence Hall. I thought his Sam F. Davis was much better than it looked. He kind of made that move into a fast pace that kind of broke the race down. I also thought that Sol Volante coming back and running so well in the Tampa Bay Derby suggested that that race was actually pretty good.
And King Guillermo. I mean, King Guillermo is the one that set the pace there, right?
So, right, absolutely. And so it just feels like Independence Hall is sitting on a race with an opportunity. I know that they were concerned about his maturity at some point. He was kind of acting a little bit silly in the paddock a couple races back. Seems that maybe that's gotten solved as he's gotten a little bit older. So I think he's a great alternative. But like I said, Tis the Law gets a good trip, and there's no weirdness in the race. Like, there's just a normal, honest pace, straightforward. He's going to win.
Matt, I know you're good at this game. Independence Hall, how far do you think he wants to go? It's. I trust Mike Trombetta implicitly, so whatever he decides is good with me. But there is some part of me wondering if the cutback wouldn't agree with him. But what do you think?
No, I mean, look, that's the only question I have about this horse. It's not the ability, not the talent level. He fits in here. You could make the case he is as talented as a horse like Tis the Law. The problem I have is, as well as he ran in that Sam F. Davis, for all the reasons Jonathan laid out, he was up there closest to the pace. Effectively, the pace fell apart, and you had Sol Volante come from farther off of it. You had Aja Weed just kind of picking up some pieces from the back. there's just this nagging feeling that I have that he is a one turn type as opposed to a two turn. And who knows, maybe he could be effective at two turns, but I don't know that that would be his best foot forward. I wonder if when it's all said and done, regardless of how he runs Saturday afternoon, if his future is going to be going shorter, whether it's 7/8 of a mile, one turn mile type. I think the talent is there. I'm not totally sure what to do with him yet. My hunch is that he's a one turn horse.
There's still time to get wagers in for this race at Golden Gate. This kicks off their late pick four. Matt, who did you use in the contest here? Any ideas on who folks might want to bet who are watching along with us?
I
gave you that too late, but anyway, hit it.
I went with the 9 on the outside. It's not a wild opinion. I wanted to see what the Southern California kind of form did up in Northern California. I know the surface changes is no bargain, but I went totally Tiger.
JK, who do you have?
I have the mute button. I don't know if you guys saw me. I was crushing some chips. I have the 9 as well.
Okay, 2 votes for the 9 and here at Golden Gate. Sorry we didn't get those ideas out to you for those of you betting along at home, but we'll see. We know I'm curious what Tony ended up doing with his 3 entries in here.
Yeah, 3, 5, 9.
What's that, JK?
I thought he had 3, 5, and 9, if my brain okay. Remembers correctly.
Now, you guys are way ahead of me, so I'm going to let you talk through the race while I get
the beer. They haven't popped yet for me either.
Yeah, I was going to say, they haven't broke yet. I guess the other thing we should probably mention, I don't think we've actually laid it out, 240 entries total. The top 24 get into the Saturday BCBC live qualifier for $179. So, you know, obviously we're looking at the top of the leaderboard, but there's still a ton of folks. We're only halfway home, and the cutoff right now is 17 and change. So, I mean, there's still a ways to go. Now they're off.
Yes, now they are.
Pete's gone. Anyway, okay. With a race like this, I mean, was there anything that you looked at specifically? Boy, the horse down on the inside looked a little bit hard to handle going in the first turn, but...
No, it was just that it was that drop thing for me that pushed me over the edge, right? I talked about it earlier.
Yep.
Honing in on horses dropping. Horse ran for 50 the last 2 times, and I just felt like, okay, now they're dropping in for 12. I don't care about the surface change. This horse is just going to be better than the rest of them.
Was there sort of an alternative for you? Who was your backup, just in case?
Yeah, I think I was going to use the 6, Jim State. Another one dropping in from 25 had been competitive, running for 25, 3 races back where he ran 3rd. Was only beaten 3 lengths last time for 25, and that was all going shorter, but I felt like he had started his career and had a lot of 2-turn races in there. So I felt like, you know, maybe he could have been the one. So the 6 would have been my alternative if it wasn't for the 9.
My pickup was the horse on the lead, but looks like in water now. Showed some speed in that most recent start. The thing that concerned me was he just didn't go that fast early on. And I figured that was going to be a tough hurdle to get over. And Gem State's looking good right now. Again, it's Golden Gate. I have no idea when when you're home and hosed or you're in deep water, but he's opened up by about 3.5, 4 turning for home.
I think he's home and host.
I mean, somebody's going to need to shot out of a cannon at this point to run him down.
Yeah, and oddly enough, of the 3 horses that Tony used, he didn't use the 1. He didn't use the 6. He's the 3, the 5, and the 9.
Yeah, and he won't get any piece of it either because the 8's going to run 2nd. It looks like anyway. Yep, look like 8-4 maybe behind the 6. 6 is a good price too. I think 6 went off at 8-1, 6-1.
Yeah.
Looks like Brian Chenvert from BCBC fame. It looks like the highest name on the leaderboard to have that one. An excellent player. And, I mean, the 6 looks pretty friendless in the contest from there down to number 48, Michael Baychuk, who also will now vault. Price did come in a bit into 6-1, but still, that's going to be about whatever it's going to be, 18, 19. Very valuable points in this horseplayers.com Thirsty Thursday virtual happy hour contest. But of course, as you point out, Matt, this isn't like, you know, when you're the temptation for me here is to focus on the very top of the leaderboard, but it's really just all about, you know, the prize here for first is the same as the prize. What did we say? How many people are going to win their entries into Saturday? It's when you have a plot prize structure that's that flat, it's really just all about trying to get your nose ahead of that goal. How does that change strategy for you, JK, when you don't have to shoot for the top and you can just, you know, sort of lay up, be in the top 24 of a contest like this and get the same goal as the winner?
No, I like it. You have the opportunity just to play what you like. You don't have to worry about having that special day to get all the way to the top out of 240, because that's not easy. And obviously just being able to just pick your winners. And if you know, if you pick enough, you get into the top 24. I think this is also the right time for me to introduce Layla, the betting bug.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
She said Muggs doesn't want any of this.
Muggs is down here. She's asleep on the couch over there, but I was touched that she came down to check things out. I don't think she looked at the Golden Gate form today. I tell you, the two happiest creatures in the world about being confined to one place, as far as I can tell, Perrin and Muggs. I mean, they having us around all the time. This is their dream scenario. They don't want it. They're the only ones who don't want it to end, as far as I can tell. I would imagine for Layla, it's pretty similar, JK.
She's having fun. She's posted up. She's been watching Madden quite a bit, eating lots of snacks. So
that's been your number one, you know, when you're not handicapping, you're not doing these Fox broadcasts, your number one distraction has been Madden?
Madden and these video podcasts from like that crew of comedians, Joe Rogan, Brett Kreischer, Whitney Cummings, Theo Vaughn, Brendan Schaub, like watching all of those. I could watch those for days. They crack me up. Those guys are hilarious. And gals.
Matt, how about you? What has been your? I'm actually busier than usual in with the childcare gig, plus, you know, general house husbanding. I've been cleaning the pantry. And when Susan finished her hard day of work yesterday, I did bring her an old fashioned. I've never felt more like Betty Draper. How about you, Matt? In terms of filling your time, what have you been up to?
I mean, there's a lot of time to fill. Obviously, keeping an eye on some of the races. I feel like, with the exception of this room that I'm in, just because my wife and I sort of just swap in and out when she needs to take a bunch of calls, she'll come in here. I'll get out of the way. Vice versa, if I'm recording the podcast or doing something else, I'll come in here. But the thing at night, anyway, outside of Netflix and, you know, the obvious stuff, we play a lot of Scattergories.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And we actually have two friends that live in our apartment complex. And I think we are the only four people that the four of us have seen for the past 2 weeks. So on Saturdays, we've been playing Scattergories together. And I think we have a plan with my wife's cousin and his girlfriend to play Scattergories on, whether it's Zoom or one of the other streaming sort of video conferences next Wednesday. So we're trying to just kind of maintain some sort of normalcy, but man, it's things that have gone on. I think we just, you get so set in your ways and take things for granted that are not necessarily things you should be taking for granted. You know, I mean, something as easy and simple as sports. You know, you just assume, oh, I'll be able to turn on TNT on Thursday night and there'll be some basketball game on. Well, when there's not, it's like, okay, well, now what do I do? I've got 3 hours that I was going to devote to that. Now that's gone. Go to the grocery store. There's no meat. Well, now what? There's no toilet paper. You know, things that, if nothing else, hopefully this is just sort of a wake-up call for all of us to not just assume everything is going to be there for us when we need it.
I think that's well said, Matt. We've got our new leaderboard in, as predicted. Brian Shenvert and Mike Baychuk are your new exacta, not too bad with a, you know, Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge success and NHC success right there. I'll just
Baychuk. The only reason Baychuk's doing good is because we didn't finalize the table bet. Because you can't, if we were having a table bet, he'd have zero right now because he can't seem to get up to the table.
For those that aren't up on this, JK, you've got to explain that one.
We had a table bet. Myself, Nick Tamaro wasn't there this year. Eric Bielik's been there a lot.
Your table against Bajcik's table for the last.
Yeah, so usually Bajcik
scores.
Yeah, Bajcik, his brother Ben. Ben wasn't there this year, but he was hanging out, but he wasn't playing. John Hurd, Doc Treza, and their squad. And it's our squad versus their squad. But unfortunately, they've never beat us. We've won every year.
Well, no table bet today. Bajcik zooming towards the top of the leaderboard. I'll just run down names, and then I'm going to ask you guys about, you know, I mean, there really isn't strategy as all the picks are made, but you know, I'll ask you a little bit about what you're thinking if you're just on the other side of the cut line. Third is Dave Handeland. Third, Mike Gillum. Fifth, the aforementioned Basil DeVito. Sixth, William Art. Seventh, a second Basil DeVito entry. Eighth, Jim Cruz. Ninth, John Howard. 10th, John Pinder from San Antonio. We had the pleasure of meeting, not this year at the NHCJK, but last year, a loyal listener to the show. Great to see him doing well. He's in a tie for 10th with Basil DeVito's other entry. Basil looking in a good spot to get himself qualified to Saturday here. 12th, Manning Carroll, who I've interacted with. 13th, Brian Duransky. Chris Inman next, and then I'll just run him off. Sam Stinson, Joey Aguilar, Scott Coles, Barry Camarda, Michael Webb, Christopher Hagee, Ron Chittick, Chase Tranter, Matthew Parsons, Brandon Staubel, and it's a bit of a tie for fourth with Ron Tackett and Michael Cavana also in there with Pete Macheska just on the outside looking in 27th, 20 cents behind, and then the flotilla, the trio of Tony Joe entries also with 2360. What are you thinking if you're around the bubble here, Matt?
Well, around the bubble, I think you can also look at it and say, obviously, it'd be nice to grab a winner or two in these last two races, but at the very least, just get a piece. Try to get some points that can kind of push you up a little bit. And at the same time, you know, depending on who you've picked at this point, just hope that there's not chaos. Hope that there was not a 20 or 15 to one shot that comes through. And I think at the same time, if you are someone like myself that's just sitting back, not you got nothing to root for at this point, you can only hope that if you go with a cold double, you got a chance to hit the board. Because if you're in a position like me, I got a 5-1, and depending on how the Golden Gate numbers look, 5-1. So it's at least a puncher's chance. If sure. if you cold deck a double, that maybe you can end up with a low $30 kind of total. But
yep,
you know, it's still one of those things where if I were close to that cutoff, close to that 24, I'd be saying we need to win this next race at Gulfstream. Just gotta get something out of it though. Gotta hit the top two.
Starting to pick up points becomes incredibly important. Generally speaking, JK, in a pick and pray, how does your strategy change? How does your approach to picking the horses differ, especially as you get later on in the contest? But really, what's your process throughout the whole thing?
I mean, I'm dead, right? But I prefer it like this. I prefer that I get to put in all the horses I like, and that I don't get to play math right now. Because if I was in the lead or doing well, I wouldn't want people playing math against me. I just put them all in and here we go. And so, like I said, I'm dead. If I was on the bubble, or if I was in the top 24, if I was 26, 7, 8, 9, I would feel very confident that I would get in. I love the one Peacock Kitten in this race. I like my play in the last race at Golden Gate. And so I would feel comfortable getting in, but I'm not in position. I've got $8. I've got no shot. I'm going to drink this beer and root for Bajcik.
I like Matt's attitude better. With 24 going, I still feel like everybody has a chance to
no sneak
in if you go runner. And you say that because you think there'll be 24 people ahead of you who have too much of what you have that you feel like it gives no shot?
So right now, I don't even know what place I'm in. Like I said, I have $8. I guess what place to see I am in. I'm in 89th, right? So I have the one at 8-5, Peacock Kitten.
You've got an 8-5. Okay.
Yeah. So there's no shot. I mean, if I hit this, people in front of me that have it. You did ask a question earlier though, which is, this is one of the fun things you can do is you're going to have a lot of action in this race. You can look, if you're on the bubble or close, you can look to see who has you blocked. There's someone close to you that probably has the same double that you have. My guy Hunter Archibald, he's got the 1-1 here. Right behind him, two spots behind him in 33rd, Edward Fox has the 1-1 as well. Edward kind of knows he's in trouble at that point. You know, you got to hit both of them, and you never know what's going to happen. So, you know, that's the nature of the pick and pray. But I'm fine with that. Like I said, I'd rather people have to put their horses in than be able to play math on me late.
Yeah, I think when you're already into racing and you're an established contest player and you're looking to play every day and do well in these feeders and advance that way, that the pick and pray format works great. I do feel like the live contest format is amazing for creating excitement among some of the new players who might be coming to the game, who we were talking about before. I think it would not be a bad idea at all for a horseplayers.com, for example, to have a featured lower bankroll live contest in times like these to give people just the thrill and the fun and the chase. And I get why you're saying you don't want people to just be able to play the math, but it also just makes it more fun, I think, JK, for folks who are new to the game and who, you know, might be on the outside looking in at this. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but I think at this point in time, like, we want to invite people to our game because we're the only game in town. And I think that anything that you can think of, wherever you're, however you're involved with the game, you can find ways to involve people in an easy way to do it. One recommendation that I have is, like, you know, and this is not a horn tooting thing, but, like, you know, the Fox broadcast will be on all weekend. And I even think there's some NBC with TVG stuff that's going to be on this weekend as well, is find a pick four or a pick three or a pick five or whatever it might be that involves the national broadcasts. Text all of your friends who you know love sports. Tell them to send you $20 on Venmo. Put a ticket together for everybody to watch and play along and enjoy. Like, do things to bring people to this game to, you know, from a human standpoint, to help them distract. You have a talent that can help them distract. So you can do that. But also, it's a great opportunity for our game to highlight how fun it can be.
Matt, you've got some fun stuff going on this weekend, too. I want to make sure we get your the live stream you're involved in plugged, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on what JK was just saying as well.
Yeah, Saturday afternoon, we'll start at 5 o'clock over on ABR's Facebook page. Me, Allie Vance, Bram Weinstein, Dan Torgman will go through the races leading into and including the Florida Derby, just kind of chopping things up. And I'm sure there's going to be plenty of time for us to talk about a number of different things. So that should be a good time. Head on over there if you're so inclined. And, you know, kind of going to Jonathan's point, you know, the idea of playing a multi-race bet is a good time. If you get a group of people, everybody pitch in, whatever. I've brought it up to some of my friends and, you know, I'm sure some people will roll their eyes. Terrible. You know, if you're just looking at the math of it, it's a bad idea. Well, guess what? I'm at this point, let's get the people in before we worry about the math. let them, if I got four or five of my buddies and I tell them, I'll throw $50 in this next race, pick one horse to hit the board, pick one horse and bet it all to show. Let's hope that you hit it. And roll it onto the next race and pick one horse in the next race. Bet it all the show. Just roll with the show parlay.
I love a show parlay.
There's good nothing.
Show parlays. Show parlays are not show bets. Right?
But the
show
explain what you mean by that.
Kind of has a stigma about it, and I agree with that. If you're a serious horse player, you should never be betting the show. You should be constructing tickets that have a horse running third and trifectas, and that's fine. But this is completely different. A show parlay is fun. It's exciting. You get people involved. And the coolest thing to do with people that don't know what's going on for action, and you can still win money.
On a big day, especially. Saturdays at Saratoga in big pools, you can do all right with them. I mean, in my life, I think it would be one of the few parimutuel pools I would call myself a winner in, the show pool, because of big day, just because of doing parlays on big days. You see some crazy stuff happen.
As long as you have big fields, let's say 9 deep, and look, even if there's a race with a favorite, so be it. You end up getting through it. You collect your 30 cents on every $2 or whatever it is, and you move on. But the idea of, you know, I think too many people, there is something to the idea of you win races, you cash tickets, you gain confidence, whether that's, you know, fallacy or actually accurate. The idea of, I don't want my friends to show up with $100. It's gone in the first two races, and then they just drink for the rest of the day. And they're like, well, I could have done this at home and I could have saved $100. Instead, you give them something that, you know, and I think that's the most fun of the entire thing, is that, like, if you have a big group, you know, and you all show up with $100 for the day, if all of you throw in 10 or 20 at a time, and you've got a group of, you know, let's say between 8 and 12 of you, I mean, you've got a fair amount of money going into each one of these that you end up going through, and you don't have to have a brilliant opinion. You know, again, in a race like this here at Gulfstream, we've got a full field of 12. You need to finish in the top quarter of the field. Again, doesn't always happen, but I mean, it's a heck of a lot easier, and it's not nearly as daunting as sitting there saying, pick who's going to win, especially for somebody that's never done it before.
Some of the most fun days I've had and memorable days were doing show parlays with friends where I can't
blast.
You know, even though I'm sure I was, you know, betting much more, like I can't remember if I was up or down in the much more I was handling doing my own thing. But I just remember the fun, dramatic moments that led to, you know, either blowing it in the last race or the best memories of all, of course, hitting in the, like, running it all the way through and then having that little, whatever it is, a little $1,000 kitty that just feels like free money to go out and get drinks and dinner with your friends. I remember a Belmont opening day many years ago, going out there and ending up at the Fourth Avenue Pub in Brooklyn and just like having to work to spend the money that we'd won. And it was just such a fun, cool day. Any other thoughts on this race, guys? They're getting ready, it looks like, to head to the gate here at Gulfstream. Okay, I followed you in. I went ahead and did a little bet on the one here to win. Any wagers for you, Matt?
No, I'm going to sit back just because, again, everything I've bet on is going to, they're running up the track. So this will be the time that this is the reverse psychology and get me ready for the weekend where Belgrano will run really well here. I won't have a dime on the horse, but at least it'll be good mojo moving forward. I think the three is a little interesting. You know, draw a line through the most recent run that was washed off the turf. You've got some numbers in the past that are at least competitive here at this level, can be relatively close to the pace. Blinkers go on. I don't like the horse at 3-1. Keeps taking a ton of money as we go closer and closer to post. But that was where I ultimately landed. And here's the other piece, too, if we're talking about it from a contest standpoint. You know, the case that I laid out, if I can cold deck a 5-1, 5-1 double, that's all well and good. Now, if this horse goes off and pays $8 if he wins, my chances are very, very slim, if not nil.
JK, you're such a horizontal player. What do you do? It's a horse that you love in the last leg. There are no horizontal bets connected to it. And it's a shorty, 3-2. Is this a chance for you to get involved in trying to cold deck an exacta? Will you do the sort of degenerate-y get out for the day and just bet the horse that you like if you really like it? Or do you just sit on your hands at this point?
Well, I feel like you're judging on my shoulder, which is a little bit weird and rude, but look, I mean, you know, it's different, right? It depends on what happens. If I'm spread in the last leg of a pick four or pick five and I get beat, but I'm spread in the last leg, then I just watch. You know, I don't have an opinion in the last race. That's why I was spread in that race. I'm going to skip it. When I'm singled in the last leg, which I was, the Peacock Kitten, then, you know, I'll come back with a little win bet. You know, if it's a single only, though. I mean, other situations like that, I'm not going to – if I used five and then I come back and try to pick one of them to bet or bet it, you know, I don't typically do that.
Even at 7-5 here, you're going to go ahead and bet to win and try to get a little scratch back.
You need to change the tense of that question. You went to bed.
It's done and dusted. All right. Well, let's see. I think they're finally getting ready to go into the gate here. We'll obviously talk you through this race. We'll check in on this leaderboard for our Thirsty Thursday virtual happy hour.
And then we gotta give Silky Wilkie some love.
Go for it.
Silky Wilkie needs the 8 or the 9 in the pick 4.
Okay.
Silky Wilkie's stock guy, one of my favorite people in the world. So Silky Wilkie's watching. He said he likes my fro. So I like his pick 4, the 8 or the 9 for him.
All right. So if we don't win with the 1, we'll root for Silky Wilkie with the 8 or the 9. What was it? Doesn't Silky Wilkie, I remember, I believe he is a grown man who only drinks white Russians. Am I correct?
Wow.
No, he'll drink other things. But I have seen him chug white Russians at Charlie Brown's, a local watering hole in Lexington. He was chugging a white Russian. Which,
I thought you had to be the dude to get away with that, personally.
Yeah, I'll eat some ice cream now. Don't get me twisted when it comes to there. I couldn't figure out how he could pull that off. But he
does. I was going to say, chugging a white Russian, isn't that just asking to throw up?
It's, yeah. I mean, I think
mean,
yeah, that I, it might be one of the time honored methods if you need to.
Good
if you've
grief.
Ingested some poison and need to make yourself throw up.
I think you need to clean it out. Yeah,
be like grab the Kahlua and cream. You know.
Yeah. Right.
And vodka. So we'll also, if you guys, I don't know how much you've looked at these other Gulfstream steaks. Maybe after this also, we can take a look and pass along any thoughts that we have. We do have five scheduled graded steaks at Gulfstream on, or no, six actually, on Saturday. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that. It does, you know, we're feeling cautiously optimistic that Saturday is going to happen at Gulfstream. That would be a good thing. Horses are loading here for the nightcap at Gulfstream. We've got 0 minutes and horses loading in. We've got JK and I have bet cash on the one, and this will obviously have major implications for this contest. Are you guys seem like you're about 30 seconds ahead of me, so I'm guessing you're off already?
No. Now they're off.
Maybe I've caught up. How are we looking, Jonathan?
We're looking muted. We are sitting the pocket. No, we're on the.
Yeah,
we're on the.
You're
lead.
On the chooch. Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the lead, which is fine with me. I like being on the front end. Now, don't start grabbing him. Let him rock and roll. He's comfy.
Are you planning on playing the force out tomorrow, Matt?
I'm going to at least take a look at it. I'll probably put a video out also on my YouTube channel just to kind of, some people were asking for it when I did a little live stream yesterday. So I'll look at it. Something will go out tomorrow afternoon, but I've seen enough people that have done a deep dive into all the graded stakes say that it's, you might need to take out a loan in order to hit the thing. I mean, I've had terrible luck on force out days in the past, so I probably won't have a ton into it, but I'll definitely look at it.
Yeah, that's always very tricky. Just because a bet is going to have reduced takeout because of the mandatory payout, if it's too tough to hit, if your opinion isn't right, it doesn't mean you should automatically play it. I think that's a mistake that a lot of players make. JK, how we, you know, again, you're ahead of me, so I
go get him, Edgar.
With where we are, but what do you think?
He's a little bit in deep water, but he's running, so I can't tell for sure yet.
Go by. We got a chance.
Oh, we got Matt in the mix here. That's
finish.
Good. We're not going
to buy
win.
And finish yeah, here. Matt's home. I don't know about home and hose there, Chief. You going to mush me?
No, you're home. No, you're good.
We got a headwind.
You're good.
All right, so I mean, look, there's a chance. It depends on what happens at Golden Gate here. Horse is 9-2. This horse went off at 5-1. And who ran second?
It looks like the 9.
9 is a little bit of a price, so the place payoff will be a little bit better.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. Rising from the ashes here, Matt Bernier.
Make a late run, hopefully.
Brian Chanvert was with you on the 3, so he will increase his lead.
But this is how it works. You don't bet your own money and the horses will run. When you bet on them, it's like a 100-pound weight on top. It's a handicap.
Brian Duransky had that winner. Sam Stinson will improve his position. Chase Tranter, Matthew Parsons, Michael Cavanna. And looking at this is very interesting. Tony Joe in his three-headed monster entry in 28th had the 3 on all 3 entries. So he's very strong, as is Basil DeVito still, to potentially get 3 entries going ahead to the Breeders' Cup betting challenge qualifier on Saturday. Should mention that all the online qualifying for the Breeders' Cup betting challenge takes place on horseplayers.com. And, you know, I'm just a huge believer that there's no better opportunity for horse players year round than the Breeders' Cup betting challenge. And rather than put up the 10,000, why not try to
work?
JK, I think, has gone for a bathroom break or to get another beer or both, as I did before.
You know, the interesting thing, you were talking about the folks that had the 3 horse in that last race. The good news in an instance like this where, you know, you brought up Brian Chenvert, who had it, who was the leader. For somebody like me, I don't mean this as disrespect. I don't really care that he had it because he was already free and clear.
Oh, he was already well beyond what you could possibly get. Anybody over the 33 that you could possibly get, you know, you don't have to worry about.
I'm worried about the folks that are basically bubble boys and beyond. You know, anybody that's ahead of me that has the horse and things of that nature. So I don't know if we've got an updated leaderboard yet or not, which would be beneficial if we don't.
Not yet. I think they're not quite official yet. So okay. We're going to get that. We're going to get that soon. We'll see how many minutes there are at Golden Gate. And, you know, I appreciate the bubble boy. You know, we love the Seinfeld references on this show, too.
All right. It's updated now. Great.
Oh, they got it. Okay.
Yeah. So the bubble is 3440. So it's probably pushing it too much for me. If I can get that horse to tick to six, I guess there's an outside chance. I'm at 24. Yeah, I mean, I still have a buncher's chance.
Quick thoughts as they're heading into the gate at Golden Gate. Matt, you first. Who's your runner here?
I've got the Uno down on the inside.
Dick Kang?
I have the four, but I also saw that Tommy Massis is in the building. Things could get weird.
He's in your house?
The hammer.
Or no, he's in the contest.
No. That'd be really weird.
That'd be very
he's
strange.
He's in 20th place right now.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I got to be honest, even at 5-1, I think I might be okay with this one.
I suddenly am doing math. I have an 11-1 shot. I have a 4. It's 11-1. I don't think I have a shot. 38.
That's if the favorite doesn't run second, you're looking at 35 from that horse alone, JK. How could that not?
JK does math and almost fails.
Yeah, we're used to that. We're used to that on this show. And Matt, I think you are drawing live, but I do think you probably need to get that favorite out of there.
Oh, you think so? I was even under the impression or the thought anyway that a win, let's say I got $12 for that, even with the chalk running in, what am I going to get? $4.85 to place?
What would five give you? Would that, I mean, I think it's going to be close.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be definitely within a buck or two, but you know, I kind of feel like if I could hit, you're right. 38 might not be enough.
It's you're going to go close.
I got 6-1.
Much more fun to try to get there. All right. I'll let you guys, you know, you're ahead. So you talk us through.
Melchior's on the lead. Bold Roman, the 5, is sitting just off 23 and a piece for the opening quarter. Malibu Alex is looking good on the outside. I'm sitting in the pocket right now at 6-1. JK is drafting in behind me. Tip out with this one and go. Split and go. Change leads. Change and go. Finish.
Finish. Oh, I thought I had
this. Finish. Get by. Go. Finish.
Oh, finish, Matty Ice. Finish, Matty Ice.
I'm not even going to get second.
You both got
it. Oh, no. Second. Neither of you won for all that?
There's a three-way photo. They're all separated by a nose.
Oh, my goodness.
The 1, the 7, and the 3. So the 2 chalks, or the 3 chalks almost. The 1 went off at 6. I don't even know if the 1 got second.
The middle got it, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
JK, you're good at this game.
No, I stopped looking because I didn't care anymore. I thought the outside was going to get there because it's kind of a weird angle, but it was the 7. I think it was 7-3-1.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens there. We'll run through our 24 qualifiers for Saturday. Other business just to finish things out here. Want to encourage folks to go ahead and donate to the 2 charity beneficiaries. We're talking about the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and our friends at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, crfinc.org/players for that one. Guys, this is also our other chance. Do you have any strong opinions in the other stakes so far from what you've seen, Matt Bernier?
I mean, I'd be doing people a disservice if I had a strong opinion. I haven't looked and done the deep dive just yet. All I'll say is there's star power on Saturday. I mean, there are names that any other time of year we would be looking at this saying this is borderline Breeders' Cup type with the form that Zulu Alpha's in. He's running on Saturday. Newspaper of Record is back for Chad.
Oh, very cool.
Obviously, the three-year-old season was not what the Connections would have hoped for. I can only assume that she's a – I mean, I'd like to think that they're going to keep her at a mile, but I don't know for sure. That's all I'll say is that this is a good card. Take your time. Go through it. And hopefully there are some opportunities. But, yeah, it should be a good day.
JK, do you have any early fancies? Obviously, folks can follow along with the Fox shows. We'll let you plug those to get your in-detail thoughts. But anything we should be focusing on from this far out?
Obviously, I'm excited to see Newspaper of Record come back. She's, she holds a special place in my heart for losing a large wager on her. Actually, the biggest wager I've ever made on a horse individually was her, and she won. And then the second biggest wager I've ever made on a horse individually, and she lost. So she owes me one. We're for the rubber match.
I'll stop you. I'll stop you right there to say that no horse ever owes us anything. It's the other way around.
I'm joking. Speaking of that, I wanted to say thank you to a friend and a listener, Dan Slattery. We got a message from friends at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation that he went over to the website and did a little work over there on trfinc.com/players.
.org, but you were close.
.org. So I want to say thank you to him. As another betting opportunity, I'm excited about Spice is Nice running the Gulfstream Park Oaks, going the two turns finally. We talked about last time some of the news back from Johnny when he got off her that day, saying that she was kind of jumping shadows and probably should have been put into the race. And so I'm excited to see her back going the two turns. I think she's a good one to lean on in race 11 in the Gulfstream Park Oaks.
Jonathan, right. real quick, I don't mean to cut you off. That race in particular, I want to know what people think of Lake Avenue, because I thought going into that Busher that she was arguably one of the best, if not the best, three-year-old outright, regardless of all the stuff that happened in California with all those nice fillies, and she showed up and dropped an egg. I'm not going to hold that against her, but, I mean, is it a matter of is she just not as good as I thought she was, or are others willing to give her the benefit of the doubt? That was the first start going a one turn mile. Now you get her out to a distance that you probably wanted all along.
I am going to look at her through a pandemic lens. I feel like she showed up here. Obviously she's been training at Payson. So she went up there to try the New York thing, but now with the New York races in jeopardy, it's like, where are we going to run? What are we going to do? I feel like she's coming back a little bit too quick. I don't feel like Mott's plan was we're going to run her in the Busher and then we're going to run her in 21 days in the Gulfstream Park Oaks. I would probably lean against, just because it doesn't feel like a very Mott thing to do, but I could be completely wrong.
No, I think that's fair. Just curious what other thoughts were.
I agree with you. I thought she couldn't lose in the last race, and she did. And she didn't just lose. She ran very, very poorly.
All right. I think we've got our final leaderboard. Can you guys confirm, give me your opinion? Can we run this down? Is this? Do we have our 24 qualifiers for Saturday?
This is final, yes.
Excellent. And we'll just do it from the top. We won't bother with scores. We'll just do it from the top to the bottom. Props to Brian Shenford. We'll talk about his score. 66-20 distances the field here on horseplayers.com. And then the other 23 we'll just run down. Matthew Parsons, Dave Handeland, Scott Coles, Basil DeVito, Brian Duransky, Scott Stinson, Chase Tranter, Mark Rudy, Jeff Long, Michael Cavana, Tony Joe, Andrew Wright from TVG, ending up 15th. Frank Foss, another Contest World veteran. John Howard, Brandon Staubel, Mike Gillum, Mike Boreal, Nancy Spence, Stephen McNadden, Sherry Riddick, and William Smith. Oh, wait, it's a tie. There's a big tie. Do you know how ties work on the site, JK? Because Tommy Massis ends up also with $38. So we've got this big scrum of players.
Yeah,
from Mike Boreal at 20th.
Down if I read it correctly, what I think happened here is that Sherry Riddick or whatever and William Smith are going to be the final two in, and that Tom Massis, although he had the same score, the tiebreaker, I don't know the exact rules on horse turns, I forget it, but I think it's something along the lines of the most, the person who had the highest win mutuals. Then it goes to the person who has the place mutuals and the.
So it's
the high, it's, so it's, I think
Tommy ends up being the double bubble boy.
Yeah, based on this, they each, all of them tied with the highest place price, but then Sherry and William both had one horse to show. Tommy had no horse to show.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
So there's your tiebreaker.
There's your tiebreaker. Bad
Sorry,
luck
Hammer.
For Tommy. Yeah, well, you know, he'll live to fight another day.
I'm not worried about Tommy.
He's we appreciate all of his support, whether it's, I mean, Tommy is the greatest. Not only does he one of the most popular guests in the history of the show, but somebody who supports us. He was even watching you, JK, play that crazy video game the other night. That's how much he supports us.
That was fun. I played a game called Farlap on Xbox, and I put it on Twitch. And look, we had like 30 people watching, but it was fun. We just I was trying to look. It's funny for me too because I could find out. I understood how to wire the, so I put a horse on the lead and I could win. But I kept trying to challenge myself by taking one back, and I just couldn't time it right. Part of the course.
Oh, that's amazing! All right, I think. It's after 6 o'clock. I think we've done what we can do, gentlemen. This was a ton of fun for me. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. And hopefully we'll get a chance to do it again. I mean, if California keeps rocking, maybe there's a way we can do it sooner. I wish you luck in your categories this weekend.
Yeah, thank you.
And, you know, love to you, and it's been so much fun having you and being able to hear you weekly during your show. Folks can subscribe on iTunes to the Matt Bernier Show and also check him out on YouTube. You know, absolutely one of my favorite voices, and just a pleasure to be working with you again. So thank you so much, my friend.
No, I appreciate it, boys. Everything's been great so far. And like you say, let's fingers crossed, hope that the racing continues for as long as everyone deems it. You know, let's be honest, as long as everyone deems it reasonable and within, you know, within a reasonable doubt, let's all use our head. If it gets to a point where we need to shut it down, shut it down. But for the time being, if everybody kind of thinks that this is feasible, let's carry on with it. But yeah, it's been a great blast. I'll be back on Monday with the podcast, and hopefully we have some good racing this weekend, guys.
JK, for you, you know, thank you so much. Had so much fun working with you all the time, and such great pleasure to see you doing the job that you do over on Fox. I had a great check-in with my man Harvey Pack this week, and he said you sounded like you knew what you were talking about, but of course the one time he decided to follow you in, you gave out two horses and they ran 10th and 11th. So what do you have to say for yourself?
Hey, if they're not running 10th and 11th, you're not playing the game right. No, I appreciate that from a legend like Harvey. That's pretty cool. No, it's a tough time, and hopefully this hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever we did act as a distraction for you. And I encourage people to be distracted. You know, do whatever it is that helps you be distracted, and just don't worry about 2 weeks from now. Worry about tomorrow. And we'll be on the Fox broadcast is back tomorrow. I'm not on tomorrow, but I'm on Saturday and Sunday. Andy Serling is back, so that ought to be interesting and fun to get Andy back on. I think Keisha is going to be back on the show. Greg Wolf, Lafitte, Gary, the whole nine. So it should be fun. We'll be back on, and I think TG is going to do their NBC thing, the NBC sports thing they were meant to do last weekend. I saw some tweets about that. So support those if you can. Get your friends watching, and if you got an extra couple dollars, if you don't feel inclined to give it to the TRF or TAA, give it to somebody. Give it to somebody, because obviously somebody can use it.
No doubt about it. Other thank yous. We want to thank DJ Unstable, producer Craig Gorbunov. Fantastic job today. We know we dumped a lot of nonsense on you. You did a great job getting us up and running for this maiden voyage, and hopefully we'll continue to rock and roll with that. Peter Rotundo. Breeders Cup, fantastic. Just a great friend and a great producer, sending fantastic notes along the way. Love working with Pete and the team at Grand Slam Social. So thank you all and the Breeders Cup very much for getting this going. Horseplayers.com, of course, for hosting us, and hopefully we'll be doing more with them in the future. And then, of course, our friends at the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. They're why we're doing this. We're making zero on this one. This was just a fun idea to help support them during a time of need. One more quick shout out too to our friends at OldSmokeClothing.com, who produce the lovely Degenerate Horse Player t-shirt I'm wearing, as well as the I'm Alive in the Pick 5 shirt JK was sporting during the broadcast. Go over there and you can get free shipping if you use the promo code MONEY. Lots of great stuff on that site. Find us under their partners tab. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.